We are in the book of Matthew, and Jesus in the book of Matthew, you know, there's five specific teaching times, or a big word, not a big word, fancy word, discourses, where he's teaching things. We've gone through three, you know the Sermon on the Mount. We've gone through the next two, and here is the fourth of five. And I was trying to plan out, what will Derek and I do for our series Working Together, you know, to finish out the spring, and now I don't know how much time we got to finish anything out. I'm not sure if I'll get to finish this out. We'll see how the Lord provides. And if not, someday I might be called back and I'll know what series to finish if I can still remember which one I was in. So it's the fourth discourse, and this is called the Church Discourse. Not a very original name, but I called this Life in the Church. And then I thought, in the church, that's like inside the building. And it's not in the building. This is all around. So it's life as the church. And I thought, no, but it, you know, it's just the way that we live the church. So it's really the life, you know, of church people and in, as, of, I don't know. I ended up with whatever is in there. That's what I finally ended up with. I think it might be in. It's even crossed out on my notes, and then I crossed out the cross out. It's life for us. Remember this, though. The church is not the building. Well, we could call it the church building because it's the building of the church. But somebody point out to me, who is the church? Yeah. Well, I said point. You said talk. All right. I should have known that would happen. But it's us. It's we who are believers. If you're in here today and you're not a follower of Jesus, I don't even care if I'm the one who let you become a member. If I voted for it, if you're not a believer, I made a mistake because I didn't know your heart. I heard what your voice said, that you'd trusted in Jesus, and you didn't. And if you didn't, talk with me afterwards, if you would, please. But this is how we're supposed to live. And there's going to be at least two messages. I see two messages in this, and this is the first one. I'm supposed to be preaching next week, but they got this guy called the pastoral candidate. Somehow he gets priority over me, and so, as he should. So I'm going to have that other one the next time I'm scheduled, and you'll know that when it happens. So here we are, life in the church. And to make sure that we remember this, I want you to read the three points to me. We're just going to start with the first one. It's humble yourself. I'm going to say humble yourself. You're going to say humble yourself. I'm going to say humble yourself. You're going to say humble yourself. And afterwards, we'll know you're supposed to humble yourself. All right? Let's see if we can start that. I think I'm supposed to want to go first. Wow, look at all of our college students that are here today. This is so very, very good. We've got like 66%. Tremendous. Good to see you. All right. So remember what we're doing now. I'm going to start. Humble yourself. Humble yourself. You're not bad at that. That's really, really great. All right. And so humble yourself. Hey, the disciples, this is the answer to a question the disciples asked. Could you imagine getting to ask Jesus questions? And here's the question they asked him. We look at this and think, what were they thinking of? What were they thinking of? They asked Jesus, who is the greatest? Now, don't look down your nose too much at him, because what has changed in this world? Nothing is new. My family is better than your dad. I remember as a boy, my dad can beat up your dad. My town is better than your town. My pizza shop is better than your pizza shop. My wife's cooking is better than your cooking. My sports team is better than your sports team. And don't tell me you don't partake in some of them somewhere, because you got something that's better than somebody else's. Your church is better than the others. Well, I gave you that one. It is good. No, we can't say stuff like that. We're always, and now we've got GOAT. It's not just the greatest. We've got to have the greatest of all time. Somewhere we're going to have greatest in all time in every universe or something like that. But right now, it's just they wanted to know, who is the greatest? And Jesus said this, whoever humbles himself like this child. So I'm not going to do it during a pandemic. I think I've done this a time or two before. I've gone and picked up a child, pick up a small one. And it, Jesus did. He said, there's a child there. This is like transgenerational. And so there's a child listening to him too. It's good to have children here. They can be playing with Hot Wheels and Barbie dolls and coloring, and they can still listen better than most of us can. And so it's good to have children around. And it's also good to have them in a special worship time, so you do, as parents, what you think you should do. Takes a little child and says, this is the example. If you humble yourself like this person, that's what we want. This is your job. Because it says, humble yourself. We have to act, live, talk, be humble. That's the opposite of pride. You and I sometimes want, it's all about me. That's not pride. I mean, that's not what we want. That's not humility. That's pride. It's all about me. I'm pretty good stuff, aren't I? Yeah, no. At this conference yesterday, you're in the inner city. Man, God is doing stuff in the inner city of Baltimore. You know, that NAM thing, the offering and all that's going there. I want to tell you, there's a lot of lousy stuff going on, but you go where the gospel's being preached, there's a lot of great stuff going on. A lot of great preaching and singing, and I was in a church where that was all happening yesterday with lots and lots of people from 50 different churches that are seeing what is God doing in the inner city. And there weren't too many people there with my color skin. I loved it. It was fantastic. Pray that that happens up here in Perryville too. One of the sermons, the guy said, you don't impress God at all. Oh, you're saved. That doesn't impress God whatsoever. He did it, not you. You know, you're singing, that didn't impress God. It was kind of like the theme later on. You know, they'd say, well, you know, you don't impress God at all. And you know something? You and I don't impress God. No, we don't. What's impressive? God's impressive. Not you, not me. We do a good job. We work hard to try to do good stuff. That doesn't impress God. If your heart is with Him, that is what honors and glorifies God, and that is impressive. So be like the child that knows how to depend, knows how to trust completely, because a child's got no resources. They've got to have, unless at some young age the parent has already trained them how to run the family, and sadly many families are like that, they're completely dependent, and they should not be telling us what to do. They're completely dependent, and they're the models of how we could trust God completely. We've done a lot of learning how not to do that, but a child reminds us how to do it. And this is important stuff. Because Jesus said, truly I say to you, verse 3, unless you turn and become like children. I love the children's message we do. Nobody does children's messages. The Bible doesn't say you have to do them. The Bible says don't do them. I think it's a lot of fun to think about all these children. You know, can you imagine I'm going to church to become a man of God? How many of you, when somebody said, what do you do this weekend, are brave enough to say, I went to church, and I'm becoming a woman of God or a man of God? I bet that young fella, Drake, might have said that more recently than you have or ever. You don't impress God. But then again, I don't either. We need to humble ourselves, and this is important because the person that is not humble, the person that cannot depend and trust in God like a child is never going to enter the kingdom of heaven. On earth, that place where the hearts of all, that's the kingdom of heaven, where Jesus is ruling hearts. He's not ruling your heart now, and He's not going to rule your heart ever if you're not ready to trust or to attempt to learn from a child how to trust in that kind of a way. No works of pride here. Completely dependent on God, or you and I never have a part with God in His kingdom here or in heaven. So verse 6, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin. Now, he's just talking about children, and all of a sudden, I don't know what was going on in front of him, but all of a sudden this shifts from who's the greatest to it kind of laying down the law here. Whoever causes one of these little ones, these little children who believe in me to sin. So children can believe in Jesus. I'm not ready to baptize them myself until they get to a certain age. I don't think we should let them become a member of the church until they're ready to do church member type things. But you don't want to stand between a little child getting spiritual, growing to know Jesus, and living out the way he's supposed to, and his Lord Jesus. Because if you or I were going to live in such a way as to cause a little child to sin, look what's happened. It's discouraged by God because it says it would be better for him to have a great millstone around his neck. That's a huge, huge, heavy rock. But let's just say the a Ford pickup truck. All right, you can have a Chevy or a Dodge if you want. to have a great millstone around his neck and to be dropped in the depth of the sea. Go down about a mile, tied to a truck. That is, that's horrific. I think that he's saying that children are important. And the parent that says, I don't want to expose my child to Bible, church, prayer, I'm going to keep them away from that until they're old enough to decide on their own and they're 18. I don't want to be standing anywhere near them when they face God to explain what they did to not allow a child, when they're most able to think spiritual thoughts, to figure out if they like living with God or not. I'll just say it in a gentle way. God discourages that. Now, shifting to what we did in the children's message, here's the point number two. How are we living in a church? We've got to be humbling ourselves. And number two, we want to separate from temptation. I'll say it, you say it, I'll say it, you say it. Separate from temptation. Oh, you did it together almost really well. Separate from temptation. Oh, perfect. We could take you on the road. He said, but I don't want to do that because I might lose you. I want to keep you right here where God's doing a good work. And that's fantastic. And so the next thing in life in the church is he says, keep us from, this is the good people. This is the Christians. These are the apostles that for all time are going to be remembered as the original leaders of the church. And he says, watch out for temptation. Does that apply then to you and to me? I think it does. How serious is sin if we fall into it? Well, just remember this, that Jesus took all of the Old Testament standards and he upped them. He raised the stakes. So in the Old Testament, it says, don't murder. And there's terrible punishment for those that murder. He says, and I got to just go back in Matthew a little bit to one of the earlier times when that first discourse that he was teaching, Sermon on the Mount, he said, I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable for judgment. If we went on a little bit farther, it would say hell fire. You might not like hell or think of it, but Jesus certainly believes in it. I don't like it at all. He says, you're going to be, if you are not a murderer, if you're a murderer, we already know you're guilty and you're deserving of eternal punishment. But he says, if you're angry with your brother. Now, I was going to ask, is there anybody here that's ever been angry with their brother or their sister or somebody that's close? I probably should put it the other way around. Is there anybody here who would dare tell a fib and claim that you've never been angry with anybody? You know, that would be a rarity and maybe a sign that you need some help. You've never even felt angry one time with anyone, even with me, for doing some crazy thing that I have done. If you are a murderer, you're desirous, you're deserving of judgment and hellfire. If you're an angry person, you're angry with your dad, your mom, your son, your daughter, your husband, your wife, your cousin, your pastor, somebody, your boss, President Putin, who are you angry with? I got to be able to find somebody you're angry with. He's not on my nice for Christmas list right now. What does it say? Getting rid of that anger is so important that Jesus says you should solve that and then worship. Do you remember that speaker that came to our church one time and asked a question? I normally can answer these questions. He said, what is more important to God than worship? You got me on that one. What is the answer? And he goes here in Matthew chapter 5, because in Matthew chapter 5, verse 22, where it talks about anger, and he said, worship is not as important as reconciliation. Now, I'm not saying this day that if somebody can come up with an excuse that they're angry with somebody, then they don't have to go to church. I'm just going to use that as my card. Oh, I can't go to church yet because I have not decided yet to reconcile. No, that's not it. The thing is, you must worship. And so you must reconcile now, between whatever time is left between now and your next worship service. That was the point of the whole thing, not give you an excuse, not a card to get out of jail, get out of worship, get out of God in your life, just live your own life. Well, you can live your own life. You can live it now and forever. Not a good option. Well, Anger is out. How about adultery? Adultery is a very, very bad thing. Very, very bad. No, no. Jesus upgrades that in 5:28. He says, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And let me gender equalize here. You know, if you're a woman and you looked at a man with lustful intent, then you've committed adultery with him in your heart. This is a hard thing for some women to read. This is a hard thing for almost every man to read. In fact, I would almost go to say, if you don't know what this means as a man, you must have already joined LGBTQ+, and you decide you're some other orientation, appreciation, or whatever. I'm not sure I can quite make that. But this is something that a lot of us here have understand what he's saying. Understand what he's saying. When we're not spiritual, and we're thinking and doing the wrong thing, even looking is what God says is wrong and deserving of. That's like adultery in your heart. God is so concerned about our heart, he says this in an extremely, this is extremely serious, how our heart is to God. It's not like, hey, do whatever you want. I mean, you know, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else, do what you want. Well, this is definitely a not hurt anybody else type of a possibility. And God says, no, I care for you. He says, this is what you need to do. This is how you need to handle it. If your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. That's called hyperbole. You know, it's like an exaggeration. Just think about this for a time, you know. You look once, lose one eye. Look twice, lose another eye. Hear the wrong thing, one ear. Hear another wrong thing, another ear. Say the wrong thing once, man, I'd lost my tongue a long time ago. You only got two sins to lose your hands, two places, the wrong place to go, lose your feet. And then the entire church, I mean, how long would it take? I don't know, what is that, like seven things, nine things? I lost track. Has anybody here done less than seven sins in your life? Yeah, maybe that newborn, Shiloh, Eden? Eve, thank you, close. Shiloh, Eve. I've got an Eden, so I'm gravitating toward that. Eden, was it Eve? So I'm confused. Shiloh, Eve. Eve was in Eden. The other way around. She might not have done this yet. But I think most of us have done at least seven sins. He's not saying we're supposed to make everybody, you know, permanently disabled and cared for by other people. I don't think that's what he's saying. He's saying, this is deadly serious. You need to separate from temptation and protect your heart. The child is the example. You trust God like the child would trust God. Instead of what you and I have learned to do, we're going to do things my way. I'll do what God wants only if I feel like it. That's the adult way, but it's not a Christian way. You know, there was a generation, at least I think there might have been at one time, at least I'm going to say it is in this illustration, whether it's true or not. They used to say things like, what must I do to be saved? And today, in this new current generation, they say, what can I do and still be saved? In other words, not how do I get saved, but what can I get away with and still, you know, God's not going to kill me about this whole thing. That's what people look for, some way to do what they feel like doing as long as I feel like it. And God never permitted us to do what we feel like. It doesn't matter if it's an L, a G, a B, a T, a Q, a plus, or whatever your orientation is. Because you might feel like doing this or I feel like doing that. You know, if I feel like having a second wife, that doesn't give me permission to do it. If I feel like having a husband, and there's not much danger of that right now, but if that happened, that God does not permit me to do that. You know, If I feel like I need your car more than you need it, that does not give me permission to get. God has never granted us permission to do what we feel like doing. He's granted us permission to learn to become like Jesus Christ. Gosh, in this world today, it's so crazy. Because anybody can do anything as long as they say they feel like it, you know, wants to be done. But I'm telling you, the government that permits that, I wish they would tell the IRS. Because I want to tell the IRS, I identify with having my taxes paid. I don't owe you anything. That's just how I feel right now. You know what they're going to say. Cough it up or we got a place in a jail for you. You know, the government doesn't manage their money that way. And God does not manage his kingdom that way. So that's how hard we need to work about separating from our sin. Verse 9, if your eye, now we're starting to go through the litany here of all the parts of the body. If your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into the hell of fire. Golly, BL, I was hoping I wouldn't go to a church that talks about hell, and here we got Jesus interrupting things talking about hell. He talks about that a lot, doesn't he? So we're going to talk about just a little bit. You should avoid it. But by the way, there's another good reason too, not a better one. If God is everything that's wonderful and sweet and beautiful, we would want to enjoy him now. This is not just I'm selling you something. This is the truth. Why would you want life apart from Jesus Christ and all of the blessings, the joy, no matter what little thing or great thing you have in life, you can live with him and you could enjoy life. But if sin is going to cause you to lose that, and he's talking about your salvation, then you need to throw out that sin and find how to trust in Jesus. Now, hold that thought. I even put in my notes to remember what thought I'm trying to hold because I can't always remember that thought. But hold that thought. We're talking about salvation. But I got a question before point three. Where do we find the battle of this temptation? You know, that he's saying if something's going to cause you to sin, don't do it. So we need to separate from temptation. He says that so you can avoid sin. Avoid sin. Where are we supposed to do that? I would say not after you sin, but in your heart when you're thinking about it. Here's Psalm 66:18. You should memorize this verse. You should underline this verse. Write the verse down, circle in your Bible, put it in the back. Do something. If I had cherished iniquity, the ESV says, or sin. I memorized it in that one. If I had cherished sin in my heart, the Lord would not have listened. Not gotten many answers to prayer lately? Who knows why? But one reason could be you're cherishing sin. Don't expect then to have your prayers answered. So this thing about my temptation to sin, do you know we're supposed to fight it in the heart when I'm just thinking about sin? I just want to think about it a little bit. I just want to think, wouldn't it be good? If I wasn't a Christian, I'm never going to do that, but I'd like to think about what if I could do it. Does God like that idea? No! You can't even think about sin. You can't cherish sin. We got to have a battlefield. We don't want it to be out there. I don't want to commit adultery with three more women after I've already committed adultery with six others. We want it in our heart. I don't want to be looking at a woman the wrong way. We don't want to be, I've already murdered three people that said the wrong thing. I don't want to do that anymore. We want to be like, in my heart, I cannot be allowing myself to be angry. You see, in the heart, that's where we do the battle. That's where we do the fight. That's where you train the children. And those children can be trained. They just showed you. They helped my friend Bullwinkle out. They took four circumstance situations. I thought I might have to coach them. They knew how to do it. Every one of them needed to do it. Almost every one that they had was the things I wanted them to say, and they were all very close. They know how to avoid sin. You just have to identify this as sin. How can we avoid it? And then you can turn around. I've got a problem with sin. How can I avoid it? You ever done that? Well, if you've got teenage kids, you might want to open up that kind of a discussion. You're going to help them. They're going to help you. Maybe. If they're spiritual, you could do that. So we need not to be cherishing sin, not valuing it as more important in our heart than God. We need to avoid temptation. And so how do we do that? This is now the adult version of the, I'm not going to bring Bullwinkle out. I think we can do this without Bullwinkle, if that's okay. But how do you do that? I once had a problem when I was trail life age, a bit like a junior high, and I was in camp trip. And somebody said, you're biting your fingernails. I said, I don't bite my fingernails. I said, I'm biting my fingernail. I never realized that. I was biting my fingernails. I said, I'm going to stop biting my fingernails. Do you know what? I could not stop biting my fingernails. We approach this like an engineer. I can't stop biting my fingernails because I don't realize it, and all of a sudden I'm biting my fingernails. And I realized I can only bite my fingernails if my fingers are in my face. So I'll keep my fingers out of my face. And I keep my hand down, keep my hand down. I start talking about it. I'm like, whoop, get that thing down out of there. And this is the honest truth. Out there, sitting on picnic tables, eating a meal or whatever, playing games, doing something, learning whatever, I'd sit on my hands. because I can't think about them all the time. But I want to make it harder from the get up here. I stop myself from biting in a week or two, maybe in a day or two, biting my fingernails because I never had my nails close to my face, so I never could bite them. It was always when I wasn't thinking about it, I was doing it. Now I'm thinking about it. I think, that is strange, but you know, that's how you solve the problem. I wasn't even trying to bite my fingernails. I just was doing it. And God can give you the power to avoid sin. And there's so much sin that we just avoid. We can be someplace else. And so don't wait till you commit the sin. One of the easiest things to do is, I noticed our candidate, I think, had that on something. If he didn't, he could have or would have. I think he might have written it down. Not being alone with the opposite sex. And you all always appreciated this back in the old days when I happened to be the pastor here. I never would do something alone with a woman. Wouldn't be in your house, my house, this house. And I never touched the money. People come to church and they say, I forgot my offering. Can you take my offering? And you've seen me do it. I say, hey Nathan, can you come over here? Hey, Emma, would you help me out? You know, I say, would you take this person's offering? You know, well, you're going to have to touch it, but I'm not going to touch it. And it was like, this is really strange. This guy won't even touch the offering. I did one time, Claude McLaughlin, Anthony, for Claude McLaughlin, the founder of the church, I will touch his offering. But I didn't touch anybody. There's nobody else around. I was just at his house. I said, okay, I'll take it. But it's the only time I ever did it. And because you guys like laugh. You know, somebody accused me, John did this or John did that. The two big things to sink pastors, sex and money. And you'd say, well, he gets in trouble a lot of ways. He's never going to get in trouble that way because he's being careful. You need to do the same thing. You're not a pastor, but you need to avoid being alone. And if you avoid being alone, you'll never have trouble. Alcohol. You're an alcoholic. Throw the stuff out at home and then never go to a bar, never go to a liquor store. I never go to a bar. I never go to a liquor store, but not because I'm tempted. I'm not the least tempted. I've gone there to rescue people. But it's the only time I go because I don't want somebody to look at it and think they'll interpret why I'm there, that I'm going to buy some alcohol and then that I'm going to drink it. Not doing it. No temptation in the least. But I'm not going to go there anyway. However, the alcoholic, that might be a problem. Drug addict. You know, you got to change your friends. You got to change your people. Your places you go. The habits you have. There's a lot of things you have to change to avoid the temptation. And you might have to have medical help too, getting off that stuff. You have a problem with gambling. I don't have a problem with gambling. I don't go to the casino because I don't want anybody to endorse what's going on there, think that I endorse it. But if you've got a problem with it, don't go up there around where everybody's losing their money and say, I hope I don't gamble. Just don't go near the place. Well, there's so many ways to gamble now. You know, you'd have to destroy your cell phone and everything. But there's ways to avoid temptation. Find the way to do it. Gluttony, your problem? I eat everything on my plate. If I don't want to eat as much, I just have to put less on my plate. You're never going to see that at a church supper. If we had church suppers twice a week, you'd have to support the pew that I sit on. I'd just be too big. I would. Gluttony, don't put certain things, whatever is your, you know, the fatty food you're not supposed to eat, just don't put it in your house. You love money? Somebody asked me once, you know, how do I avoid that? I said, give it away. I didn't like that answer. That's the only answer I had. Waste time? Whatever it is wasting your time, turn it off, hide it, give it away, avoid what controls you. Somebody gave me a good pastor, gave me his phone number the other day. And he said, by the way, you know, that's never with me. If I'm on the road, it's with me, but it's in another room. I don't hold on to it. I'm thinking, wow, mine's right here. You know, in case my wife wants me, but I'm not going to check that thing 17 times. What's the average? Is it 17 times an hour? Whatever it is, it's just ridiculous. The amount of times people check cell phones. And if you see me grab mine, my wife has texted me, I felt it, and I'm trying to find if she's okay. Wasting time, don't let it control you. Well, I can't give you the prescription for your life, except I'm going to tell you what Jesus said. Separate from temptation. Because that's important. Humble yourself, separate from temptation. This is not just for them. This is for us. But what is our responsibility for others? What's our responsibility for others? What can we do in the inner city? And the answer starts with what we do right now. What we can do right now here with anyone, and that is we can seek the perishing. I'll say it, you say it, I'll say it, you'll say it. Let's try to say it together. Seek the perishing. Seek the perishing. Seek the perishing. Yeah, there we go. I confused you saying the word together. It did great. That's tremendous. We do that because I want that to be in your mind. I don't want you to have to recite it right now, although I'd love if you could. But last one, seek the perishing. What did the inner city pastors tell us that's the most important thing they need in the city? Now, jobs, you know, and help with drugs, there's might be like two, three. But number one is gospel. Seek the perishing and tell them how they can be saved. This is not me. I'm a guy that doesn't know the inner city. This is my friends that know the inner city. And they say they need the gospel because justification, every answer to their problems flows from justification of a God who loves them. Seek the perishing. And that's what Jesus says right here. An interesting focus because he's got that child there. He's just talking about children. See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. Little ones. This is like each of us should be seeking the perishing, but especially seeking the perishing, taking the gospel to little ones. And so I want to recognize how important this is and how many people in the church do this. I'm going to ask you to raise your hand in a minute. If you volunteer in the nursery, if you teach at children's Sunday school or help in a children's Sunday school, or are you with the Awanas program, or you help with the Trail Life program, or you help with the AHG Girls program, or you do Vacation Bible School, or whatever else children's ministry that I just missed, as a parent, a teacher, a helper, a grandparent, a cousin, or it doesn't matter. How many are involved ministering to children within the life of the church? Raise your hand. Look at that. Look at that. All right, you can put them down. God bless you each. And the rest of you, I trust that you're ready to do that or you're supporting them. I mean, we do need some stuff with the adults too, you know. But that's important. And that's why we invest. Why do we have so many ministries for children? I hope it's because Jesus values them. And he is saying, seek the perishing, even little children. I got to mention, it says angels there. Does that mean every child has a guardian angel? Not necessarily. Maybe, though, because it says they're angels. Now, does that mean each one of them has one angel? Or does it mean there's a body of angels who watch over a body of children? How did God organize it? We don't know. But we do know this, that there's angels watching over all the children. So don't mess with the children, because God's got angels watching them. He may have as many as one per. But they're pretty rough dudes. So even if one of them's watching two or six, you don't want to mess with them. You don't want to mess with them. You know, if somebody is messing with the little children in Ukraine right now, someday I look forward to a God who would deal with them for doing that to them. And you and I need not just to look at somebody else doing some bad thing, but what is the good thing that we're doing? I got to answer the question. Why is there no verse 11 in here? Terry is alert always. He catches me. You know, how did I succeed doing things for so many years, not making mistakes? One of the answers is Terry. I just tell her what I'm doing, and she tells me when I'm doing something wrong. You know, she reminds me this, reminds me of the other, and she asks questions and does it always very gently. Do you really want to have the same title on that message 2 weeks in a row, even though it's a different message? Oops. Thank you, Terry, for doing stuff like that. And she asked, you know, where's your verse 11? Well, there's no verse 11. You know, you can maybe you've got a Bible. Maybe King James has verse 11 in there. But there's no verse 11 in there. And here's the reason why. There's just this little thing in there that's related to Luke 19:10. It says something like Jesus seeks the lost. That's not information that's nowhere else because something like it is Mark 10:45, but it's also Luke 19:10 and many, many other places. You even look in Matthew chapter 5 and it talks about the same concept. So why was it in the Bible and it's not there now? Well, because we're Christians. And because as Christians, we use our mind. And we look at all the different translations and we put them all together and none of them is perfect. And we take all these different original things in Greek language or Latin or something, whatever. And we look at all those things and there's a science, I learned a little bit of this too, of figuring out, you know, how do we reconcile? They're all different. Well, a lot of them are very, very easy. You know, if somebody wrote the same word twice in one manuscript and it's not anyplace else, you realize that was a mistake. And you can find these scribal errors all over. There's tens of thousands of scribal errors. And you all, I could train you for about 1 minute and you could pick out most of them. Now, the ones that you can't pick out, most of them, that's a little bit harder. This one's a little bit harder, all right? Because they wrote a Bible, they put the thing in English, and they had a verse 11 in there. And then people dug up, found these manuscripts, original manuscripts, big original manuscripts like Aleph, which is a big and an old one, and a complete one. And we look at that, it doesn't have verse 11. Now, how do you explain that most of the oldest manuscripts don't have it, but a later one does? And this is what you have to guess. Now, how could you have something that appears only in later ones that's not in any of the earlier ones? Well, the fastest explanation for that is somebody added it. Why do none of the earlier ones have it? Well, maybe it wasn't there. And so as Christians, we look at that and say, you know, we can't claim that's there because we don't think it really was. We think somebody added it. It's not bad. It's not new information. It's not something that's nowhere else. We know that Jesus sought the lost. And we just have to admit, we think somebody added that. And it just got copied. And we can do that because we're Christians. If you're a Muslim, you can't do that. Because the Muslims, when they started their thing, you know, Muhammad didn't even read or write. But after he died, they looked around and they said, all right, now what did Muhammad say and all this stuff? And nobody had the same copy. It was all different. Now, if they were Christians, they'd say, all right, let's study this thing. Let's use the science of criticism, and we're going to find which ones are original, which ones are not. But they have the Muslim way is different. And that is the head guy said, this is the right one right here. I like this one. And everybody else, burn anything different. And if you don't burn it, we'll kill you. Solves the problem. Oh, every single one agrees with every other single one, because if you had a different one, they would have killed you. That's one way to make it the same. We decided that's not the right way to run the Bible. We're going to do it a different way. And so and you might just think, oh, that gives me less confidence. No, that gives you more confidence in the Bible. Because we'll even admit, somebody slipped a couple extra words in there, but we took it out when we learned better. Isn't that something? That's how honest Christians are. So I hope you have confidence. If you didn't understand that or you got some questions you want to ask later on, come up and ask me, because I had to learn this kind of stuff, and I'd be glad to teach you a little bit. All right, but I need to take you to verse 14, because in verse 14, finally here, under the seek the perishing, it says, so it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. We don't want people to perish. 2 Peter 3:9 says, not just children, God doesn't want anybody to perish. And that's the gospel. We think we're better. Point number one, no, you're not. God's not impressed. You need complete dependence on God. I don't have a problem with sin. Point number two, we all have problems with sin. You got to separate from your temptation. Point number three, seek the perishing so you can tell them Jesus died in your place and explain how that works. Many of you have heard the story, but some of you hadn't, so I'm going to say it again. I wish we hadn't had so many messages earlier because I don't have much time to tell it, but my wife one time almost drowned. She almost did twice, but I don't have time for one story, not two. We were not married and took her up to Long Island to meet my friends. I went out. She said, I'm going to be on the beach for a while. And I said, when you come out, just watch out. The water's very cold. The Gulf Stream's not up here. It'll take away your breath. And she heard that, and she jumped in the water later on when I was far out there, and it took away her breath. And she was going down the third time when I got to her. I didn't see it. Nobody heard it. Thousands of people on the beach, hundreds of people right around her. And I was out there, and I heard, John! And that's what wives want. She wasn't my wife yet, but went, hear my voice. And I asked everybody around, did you hear something? It sounded like Linda saying my name. And thousands of people. And I heard, John! And I said, no, we didn't hear anything. I said, I'm going to check just to make sure. Swam straight in, on my way, there she was. Had to be trained lifeguard at that time. Don't ask me to do this now at 70. I'm not sure if I can do it. Pulled her out, and it's a wonderful story. I decided, you know, in a few years, maybe I should marry her too. I didn't do that at the exact time. I'm the only one that heard. Out there, there's people suffering something even worse. They don't have spiritual life, and they could die without spiritual life. They're amongst thousands of people, and nobody notices their struggle. I've led a lot of people to Jesus. Others have led a lot more, but I've led a good number. And you know why? It's because I'm so good. No, that's not it at all. You know, it's because you're trained to share the gospel. You know, well, I am. I can't credit any of it to that. Now, a couple of times I've like prayed for years for somebody and I got to share Christ with them. One time we had a custodian work here 6 years. I shared with him every week. 30 minutes, hour, hour and a half. After 6 years, I was ready to stop doing this. But I said, if he comes, I'm going to share and witness. And he said, I'm not going to trust Christ. He trusted Christ. They moved someplace else. He now preaches. I wouldn't be surprised if someday he's a pastor. He wouldn't be surprised either because he doesn't put anything past God. The reason why I get to lead people to Jesus is because I'm aware people need to be led to Jesus. The reason why you can lead people to Jesus is because you're aware people need it. Sometimes they're calling for help. Nobody hears it. Sometimes they don't even know what's going on. They ask for help. But you and I go in different places during the year, during the week, during the year. And if you are there looking for people, they will be there. Just pray that God helps you to see them, puts them in your path, and you will have people to lead you. They don't all trust Christ. You get some interesting opportunities, but you'll get some. You might say, well, I've never been trained. I don't care if you're unsaved. Grab this tract on the way out. Nothing special about this tract. It's just the one we're giving out. The price is right. Don't grab 50 of them because the next people, you know, next week, every week, grab one or two. Grab one. You should have it with you. If you don't, I've got the gospel memorized. I can do that still. It's a test. Am I, you know, just of my sanity? I can still do that without a tract. But anybody can lead someone to Christ with a tract. Now, you can't make them become a Christian, but you can explain it. It's the Spirit that has to do that. If you're an unbeliever, you could lead somebody. If you're a non-Christian today, you could tell somebody, you could read this tract to somebody and they could trust in Christ. I know, because the person that led me to Christ was not a believer. He was reading his dad's stuff. And I became a Christian. I wish he had been one too. So you can do that. So don't give me this lame old thing. You know, I've only been a Christian for 97 years. You know, get some training if you don't feel trained. Any one of you can do it. Fight in the church. Drake's going to be a man of God. Be a woman of God. Be a man of God. Be a person that cares about others. Read the tract with them. Invite them to your Sunday school class. Bring them on Sunday evening, Tuesday night, Sunday morning. You got to come to Tuesday night, your first. Rescue the perishing. Seek them. Share the gospel. Do that. We all need God. That was point number one. Sin's going to win unless we get God's help. That's sin. That's point number two. Find Christ and then seek the perishing. That's point number three. Where you live, where you work, where you shop, will you be the only one? They're not going to see me. They're just going to see you. Will you be the only one that hears them? I heard Linda. She said it was the third time going down, and that was it. How can you drown on a beach where there's thousands of people around you and there's no waves? I heard her. Do you hear Jesus telling you to hear them, to see them, to seek the perishing, that you'll put Jesus' love into their life and an invitation to hear Jesus, see Jesus, read a tract, come to church, do something? That's life in the church. Let's pray. Gracious Lord above, bless my dear brothers and sisters in Christ and others that are hearing this message, that we would be your people. We want to be humble. We want to take sin as seriously as you do and not even allow it room to grow in our heart. And we want to love others like you do so that we seek the perishing. And if you would be so kind that you would use us to rescue the perishing, do that. Father, there might be a name on our minds right now, in our hearts right now. Each of us individually, we're going to pray for that one or two or three we'd like you to see bring to Jesus. Maybe you want us to use us with them. Maybe you want to use us with somebody else. Use us. We who know Jesus, we pray in your name. Amen.